the APC podcast, acmepackingcompany.com, SB Nation. The Packers seemed relatively hapless for most of a 31-17 loss at Washington. So after 3 weeks, the Packers are 1-1-1, just like we all thought they would be. I am Zach Rapport, dialing in from Queens, and I am joined by our corporate overlord, the managing editor of acmepackingcompany.com. We always seem to talk to him fresh off a vacation, and this time he's just back from New Orleans. It is Tex Western. Hey, buddy.
How we doing?
We're doing okay. It's a little hot here in New York today. I'm in my bedroom. Kind of a topsy-turvy week for the podcast, so we didn't get our usual studio digs. So I'm kind of sweating it out in my bedroom. You were just sweating it out in New Orleans. Was it hot down there?
Yeah, it was. It was upper 80s, probably 95% humidity or so. So I was doing everything I can to help the Packers get a better draft pick out of the Saints, but unfortunately they found a way to come back against Atlanta on Sunday and win that game late. That was a crazy game.
Oh, you were at the game.
Yeah, it was good to get away a little bit, get back just in time to see the Packers kind of look like crap against Washington on Sunday.
Well, everyone I know who has been to Nolens raves about it. So really quickly, give me your Nolens hot take.
The French Quarter is a lot of fun. I'm not a big Bourbon Street fan. It's just a little bit too excessive for me. But if you go just even one block off of Bourbon Street, you get into more of like the art galleries and the live music and a bunch of really good restaurants. The food's amazing. The all the local cocktails and bars are great. So, yeah, we had a good couple days just eating and drinking our way through New Orleans. It was a lot of fun.
Excellent. One place I have not been. I've been all across the country. Been to I think 40 of the 50 states at this point, but never been to Louisiana. So that's on my tourism bucket list. But being that our podcast schedule is a bit wonky this week. By the way, follow the show on Twitter at the APC Pod, and hey, give us a rating on iTunes if you would be so kind. The show itself will stray slightly from the usual flow. We'll hit on some newsworthy nuggets here as of Wednesday evening, and we'll pull in a few listener-supplied Twitter questions as well. So a lot of fun in store, but we start, as I think we should, with big breaking news. Given how this organization has historically operated, this was a big deal, with Devon House headed to IR after playing hurt and struggling through three games. The Packers have, holy crap, you guys, signed a known veteran free agent in the middle of the season in Bashaud Breeland. Tex, I know it's amazing, but for fans that maybe tune out a bit during the summer months, can you sort of first talk a bit about Breeland's free agency journey and how we got to this point today?
Yeah, journey is definitely the right word to describe his off season this year. He just finished up his fourth year in Washington last year, and he was really one of the prizes of this year's free agent cornerback class. And in that that legal tampering period, that 2-day negotiating window before the start of free agency actually kicks off, he had agreed to a 3-year, $24 million deal with the Carolina Panthers.
Ooh.
Big money. I mean, we're talking, $8 million a year. That's a big chunk of change. And I think probably that would have put him maybe third, fourth, fifth, somewhere in that line among this year's free agent corners. But then he had a mishap, apparently while down on vacation or something in the Dominican Republic. He got into a golf cart accident that somehow opened up a wound on his foot that he had since like fourth grade. The wound got infected. And when he got to Carolina, he failed his physical and they voided his contract. And this infection was apparently so bad that it was going to take a few months to clear up. So here he is sitting and trying to get this thing cleared up over the course of the summer. Finally got a few tryouts in August during training camps. Seems like a few teams just weren't ready to clear him medically at that point. And now here he is coming to Green Bay at the perfect time at this point, with Kevin King being injured, with Devon House going to IR, and signing essentially a veteran minimum deal for 1 year. So you get a guy who would have drawn $8 million a year on the open market. You get him for the rest of this season for about $750K, even less against the salary cap. That's a big deal, and he's been a productive player in Washington, and he could be one of those kind of crazy springboard signings that that could give this defense a little bit of a jolt after a sluggish first couple of games.
Yeah, the under $1 million, the lights are clearly still on in Russ Ball's office. That guy is putting in work. That is definitely a steal of a deal. But what do you make, if anything, of so many teams passing on him? I mean, you said that there were some that were concerned and didn't want to clear him medically because of the infection. Do you think that that is it? Are there concerns about his ability to play at all? I mean, we were talking earlier about a tweet from Michael Cohen in talking to Bashaud Breeland saying, you know, did you talk to anyone else on your way to Green Bay? And he said, quote, man, I was on a world tour, about half of them, at least 13 of them, meaning 13 other teams before Green Bay signed him.
Yeah. It's very difficult to understand what could have driven so many teams to pass on him at this point, unless it was simply a medical issue. Or perhaps he was ready medically, but he hadn't gotten himself back into football shape yet. I could see that being a possibility as well, but you know, regardless of what it is, again, he's been a productive player from what we can tell. There don't appear to be any issues with him as far as his character, his fit in the locker room. Mike McCarthy talked about it today, said he was very excited about how he would fit in with this group. Certainly he'll be looked at as a leader with so many young players in that cornerback room. So it does really make you scratch your head. And it certainly obviously wasn't a money issue either, because if he was willing to take a veteran minimum deal, clearly that wasn't a sticking point for him, or at least if it was up to this point, he and his agent have moved off of it. So I think it may be just as simple as the Packers got lucky on timing for when they reached out to him, as far as where he's at medically, where he's at in terms of his conditioning. And, you know, I would temper expectations early, but, you know, give him a couple of weeks to get into the flow and pick up the defense. And I think this could be a really impactful signing.
Yeah. In 4 years with Washington, 8 interceptions, including, I believe, a 96-yard pick six last year. Someone can correct me if I'm wrong on that, but, for me, the stat that I'm most excited about is 60 games played in 4 seasons in a secondary that's often plagued by nagging injuries. And Kevin King, most recently, is evidence of that. Availability is a big deal, right, Tex?
Big time. Big time. And again, his ball skills are great. The other thing that has me excited, you know, for so many years in Green Bay, we watched Charles Tillman for the Bears punching footballs out and forcing fumbles. Yeah. Well, in each of his first 3 years, he forced multiple fumbles. Breeland did. I think he had 7 through his first 3 seasons.
One against Aaron Rodgers, I think.
I believe so. That sounds right. So, you know, if you have a guy who can not only make plays on the football when it's in the air, but also, you know, forcing some fumbles and punching it out, that's a great sign. And again, fingers crossed that this works out.
I know that he did that against against Aaron Rodgers, because I remember that it was another game a few years ago that they inexplicably lost to Washington, and I remember it well because I was watching it at a Washington football team bar in Brooklyn. So that was not a fun time for me.
Yeah.
So do you think this is an upgrade for the secondary?
Yeah, if you look at it strictly from swapping Breeland in for House, I think immediately it is. You know, he's certainly played at a higher level these last couple of years than House has. I'd have to take a look back at grading and what the analytics would say about him, but certainly on paper he projects as a more complete player who is going to be able to contribute both on the outside in the slot. You could probably throw him out there a little bit on special teams while he's getting up to speed. He's not an elite athlete, but he's shown those ball skills, and you know, he certainly translates to football speed. So you look at him as the fourth corner. Yeah, he's absolutely an upgrade over House. And, you know, again, he's got the potential. He could be as much as a, you know, maybe a number two.
Yeah. You mentioned potential. Do you think that this is a short-term rental, or do you think that if he plays well enough, he could earn himself a second contract in Green Bay?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. certainly if he sticks around this year, he'll have a team that knows him, that knows his fit in the locker room. He'll know the scheme, and I would imagine that would give them a little bit of a leg up to bring him back next year. Certainly, again, the way that this year played out for him this offseason, I imagine he'll be looking to hopefully play well this year, cash in and with a big contract next year. But with the Packers having, you know, really the rest of their cornerback stable in on their rookie contracts, aside from Tremont Williams, who, you know, wasn't breaking the bank with his deal. You could certainly imagine that there would be some money left over in that room to throw a little bit of money Breland's way if he does really play well.
Yeah, it's an exciting development, and really interested to see sort of how he fits in and sort of gets up to speed here over the next few weeks. But let's stick on the defense here and hit on Mo Wilkerson as we move right along, who sadly is lost for the year. And yep. Tex, it was pretty gutting to sort of see the updates roll in on game day. He looked like a guy who knew his season was over as he was carted off the field with an obvious ankle injury, and actually went straight to the hospital to have surgery. I believe stayed behind in the Washington area after the team went home. Obviously, you got a feel for Mo Wilkerson, but Tex, what do you think the ramifications are here for the defensive line?
Yeah, Wilkerson had really been coming into his own over the last couple of weeks. You know, he was really forming a really strong top three with Kenny Clark and Mike Daniels. And so now you have a significant drop off from him to Dean Lowry. I think it's going to be a matter of just kind of getting by for the time being. One of the names that was brought in for workouts on Tuesday was Quentin Dial, who played last year in Green Bay as well. I wouldn't be surprised if the Packers, you know, were to bring him in if some of their young players end up, you know, not impressing or not playing to the level that they're looking for, at least against the run, because that's kind of what Dial can bring to the table. Dean Lowry and Montrevious Adams, they're a little bit more refined as pass rushers. So we'll see where that goes. But, you know, certainly it's a big blow to the depth. It's unfortunate for a guy who, you know, was really looking to revive his career here in Green Bay with Mike Pettine. And, you know, you've just got a feel for him because he seems to be really well liked in the locker room. He and Mike Daniels, both being New Jersey guys, they really hit it off. And Daniels was talking about how sad he was for Wilkerson when he kind of found out what happened. And I think just the whole thing adding insult to injury is the fact that it was Kentrell Bryce who landed on his ankle and broke it. You know, after a solid week one, man, Bryce has really looked bad these last 2 weeks.
He is not in the fans' good graces right now.
No, not at all. And that's just kind of the cherry on top of the crap sundae that he's put up these last couple days.
Well, you mentioned Montrevious Adams, kind of the forgotten name. Have we seen anything from him for the first three games that would lead you to believe that he could step in and kind of fill that role?
Not a whole lot, and that's probably twofold. I mean, first of all, he hasn't played much. You know, he's been definitely the fifth man in the rotation behind Dean Lowry. The second thing is I think they look at him more as the nose tackle, backup nose tackle and backup three tech to Daniels, whereas Lowry is the more of the five technique, the same position that Wilkerson was playing. So I definitely think you'll see more Lowry. You know, you might even see a little bit more wrinkles of, let's say, Reggie Gilbert lined up at a three technique or a five technique when they're in sub packages on third downs, just to get more pass rushers on the field. But yeah, as far as those first and second downs, when you're looking to provide a balanced look to the offense, I think that's where it's really going to hurt. Is when you are trying to stop the run, which the Packers didn't do well last week. That's where I think he's going to be missed the most.
Yeah, definitely. One last defensive note, and then we'll switch sides. But, I mean, we would be remiss if we didn't at least mention this in passing. But Clay Matthews, man, yet again, having a big play nullified by, I'll say it, a highly dubious, at absolute best, penalty flag. And he was, again, at a loss for words at his locker after the game. Props to him, by the way, for remaining composed. But Tex, I was at a loss for words as well. And I don't know about you, but when it comes to the way that refs this year are calling these roughing the passer flags, what, I don't even have a pointed question. What are we doing here?
Yeah, it seems like they're trying to legislate hits and tackles and things on the quarterback out of the game when they don't actually look like, or they don't provide a potential for serious injury. you know, the body weight rule, you kind of understand it, at least with, you know, with the hit that Anthony Barr put on Aaron Rodgers last year a little bit. And I guess maybe it's a little ironic that it's coming to bite the Packers now, but I almost understand the one in the Washington game a little bit better, simply because, yes, Matthews did land with all of his weight on the quarterback. Now, the language of the rule book says there's a line in there about unnecessarily applying all of your body weight or throwing a quarterback to the ground. And I think that's that judgment call is the problem. And it sounds like the competition committee is gonna work on maybe reemphasizing exactly, you know, how to treat that unnecessary part of the rule. But it certainly seems to me that it's swung far too far in favor of throwing too many flags for plays that, as Matthew said, are just football plays.
Yeah, and you mentioned sort of legislating hits out of the game, and I was sounding off on Twitter and Ben Fennell, friend of show at @BenFennell_NFL, kind of came at me and put me in my place a little bit, rightly so. We got to DMing and had a really good conversation, and he sort of echoed that sentiment that it does seem like the NFL is trying to remove, like you said, sort of legislate hits out of the game, but they're just such a inextricable part of the game. It is, mm-hmm, at its core a violent sport, and the players know that, and that's what they sign up for. And to that end, you know, it's hard for me to take the league's sort of injury prevention efforts seriously when they don't seem to apply to, you know, all the other players on the field.
Yeah, I completely agree. Again, it kind of comes down to me to unnecessary roughness versus necessary roughness, so to speak. You know, it's are you hitting guys late? Yes, that needs to be a penalty. Are you hitting guys in the head? Yes, I understand that's especially with the focus around head injuries, that's a penalty. But, you know, things like the scoop and pull technique that Matthews used against Minnesota. Why in the world is a technique that people have been teaching defensive players from peewee football all the way up, why is it now that that's simply being applied to a quarterback, why is that a penalty? That's the question that I can't answer. Yeah. And that's why I say that it seems like they're trying to take certain things out of the game that are just natural. And I don't understand why these hits that should be clean and are textbook definitions of what a good hit should look like and a clean tackle should look like, why those are getting penalized.
Yeah. And one last note on this, and then we'll move on, because this dead horse has been beaten ad nauseum the last few weeks. But, you know, Alex Smith, when he gets sacked there by Clay Matthews, he's not in a throwing position. He's not in a prone position. He sort of is guarding the football. He crumples up. He's in the backfield. He's holding the ball. He's just a player with the football. I don't know. Like, let's say it's a wildcat formation. You got a halfback back there, and they get the ball. They're in the pocket. They could theoretically throw it. All the same rules apply to them as far as what they're allowed to do with the football, but they're not the quarterback. So they get their ass handed to them, and there's no flag. It's just it's total BS.
Yeah. No, I think that's a perfect example of a double standard, and I think you're entirely right that wouldn't have been flagged. And the only other thought that I have on this whole thing is it's frustrating that the standard wasn't applied consistently in that game.
Oh,
because
totally.
You had that suplex that Daron Payne put on Aaron Rodgers one drive earlier.
Oh, the ref didn't see it, though. The ref didn't see it.
Yeah, but he didn't see it somehow. It's the referee's job to protect the quarterback, but yet somehow he couldn't get himself in a position
right.
to
there's one official
see
whose
the quarterback
job,
being tackled.
During every play, there's one official whose job, his only job, is basically just to look at the quarterback. And he just missed that one. I'm sorry. I'm getting a little fired up. I don't normally drink beer during the show, but it's just that kind of week, man.
I hear you.
Having myself a shout out to Montauk Brewing Company, having a Wave Chaser IPA. It's pretty tasty. All right. We will talk offense and look ahead to Buffalo and answer your Twitter questions coming up next. All right, Tex, the offense, I was sort of racking my brain thinking about sort of specific offensive topics to hit on. And the more I thought about it, the more I realized that, you know what, the offense in general just seems to be kind of going in fits and starts, and certainly isn't measuring up to fan expectations after 3 weeks. I mean, it's just murky. So not a pointed question here, but like, what are your impressions here so far of this new look? And I'm doing air quotes here, new look Packers offense.
Well, in general, I got to kind of throw the tape away from the Washington game, honestly, because so many drives from that game stalled out either with a drop on third down, a drop on fourth down, or the fumble by Randall Cobb. I really firmly believe that if a couple of those balls are caught and those drives are able to be sustained, that we're talking about a very different result to that game, especially early on in the game. I mean, the Cobb drop on that first series, yeah, the defense gives up that quick touchdown to Washington. But, you know, Rodgers hits Cobb perfectly in stride for a first down and just straight through his hands. You know, if that's a catch, you know, you have a little bit of a rhythm. Maybe the offense gets moving. Maybe you drive down and score a touchdown. And you're in a 7-7 game. Then if the defense, you know, lets up another big score, then you're only down 7 points. That just seemed to happen over and over again in that game. So I feel like I can't take away too much from the result of that game. The couple of things that I can take away are, one, Aaron Jones is good and needs to be getting more snaps than either of the other running backs.
Six carries in this game for Aaron Jones. The shortest carry was 8 yards. I think one went for 17 yards. I mean, Aaron Jones, get this guy more involved.
Yep. And really, you know, I understand if they're still concerned about him as far as his pass blocking goes, and that's the reason to maybe give Jamal Williams and Ty Montgomery some more snaps in the backfield, especially on third downs. But there's, as far as I'm concerned, there's no excuse if Aaron Jones does not get the majority of the snaps on first and second downs moving forward in this season.
I mean, I get
he's just too explosive.
He's not the better pass blocker, but yeah, you just said it. He's too explosive. He is a home run hitter, and they needed that in that game. I don't care if you're down 2 touchdowns. He was gashing them. Get him the GD football.
Yeah, so I mean, that's one of my big takeaways. I'm excited to see what they're going to do with him moving forward. I do think that Mike McCarthy probably wants to get him in a little bit more, but with a 2-week layoff, he kind of said that they hit their playtime target for him. That's another one of the McCarthy cliches that I think is starting to pop up a little bit more. But
that's wearing thin on me, but
but I wouldn't be surprised if they recognize that and they do make a concerted effort to get him on the field more often and get him more carries moving forward, because the it's just so obvious who the more explosive back is.
Yeah, let's move to the tight end position, because prior to the season, I said, and I even warned myself verbally, I always get excited about the tight end position over the last few years. It is, and I can say this publicly, it's my favorite position. It's the position I played when I was a kid. And I was super excited this year to get Jimmy Graham, to get Mercedes Lewis, a killer in the blocking game. And Lance Kendricks, I can't figure out at this point, and no offense to my Rufus King general brethren, can't figure out why he's still on the team and why Mercedes Lewis isn't getting more action.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. And the only thing I can think of is that Kendricks brings a little bit more positional versatility. You know, he's more of the move tight end, the guy you can line up as an H-back or as a fullback. And certainly McCarthy still, I wonder if that's McCarthy's answer to not having a fullback on the roster, is giving Kendricks a little bit more playing time from that perspective. I'm with you. I'm very frustrated that Mercedes Lewis hasn't been cracking the lineup more often. I mean, I think he's at like 20 snaps through 3 games or something like that. And especially with all of us being so excited about the possibility of the 12 package with one running back and 2 tight ends, you know, put him and Jimmy Graham out there and you've got mismatches all over the field. So I'm disappointed that that hasn't showed up yet, and I'm hoping that it's something that they're either saving for a matchup that they like against a certain defense, or you know, maybe that's just a wrinkle they're going to throw into the playbook a little bit later on this season. But I can't wait to see it, and hopefully we get it at some point.
I can't wait to see it. Well, you mentioned tight ends sort of out of the backfield, and this is tongue-in-cheek, but only a little tongue-in-cheek. You've got Big Bob Tonyan waiting in the wings. Mm-hmm. So Kendricks, I mean, I don't know, man. He's a short leash for me.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And I'm ready to unleash Big Bob, too. See, you know, give him 5, 6, 7, 8 snaps or something. You know, give him a couple opportunities. See if he takes advantage of them. And, you know, if he does, then, you know, keep it rolling.
We got to work on it. He's a new folk hero for me. I got to work on a sound drop for Big Bob Tonyan. But moving along, I want to give a shout out to Geronimo Allison, who
we just got to
quickly clear the air in a sea of Packers fans who are wondering aloud, and of course on Twitter where I exist and call the murky depths, who are wondering aloud, you know, which one of these rookie wide receivers was going to take over Geronimo Allison's position right out of the gate. Well, Geronimo Allison is, if I'm not mistaken, leading the team right now in receiving.
Yeah, I think he's got the lead in receiving yards. He had that block punt for a touchdown against Minnesota. He's just been good all around, and he's been getting separation. I mean, he beat Josh Norman on that slant and go for the touchdown against Washington. You know, regardless of whether or not Norman thought he had safety help, he had him pretty well beat there off the line. So it's fun to see him really developing quickly in his third year and turning into one of Rodgers' more trusted targets. And he's made a couple of big catches on third downs too. So let's not forget about those. He's moving the chains and he's showing some really good route running.
Yeah. Route running is coming into shape, good hands, making contested catches. And again, something that I've always said about him is that he's not fast, but he's so smooth, man. He's got that like lanky fluidity, and he just glides down the field and he sneaks past people. And it's really fun to watch.
Agreed.
Okay, it is time to dip into the listener mailbag. We put out the APB on Twitter. At the APC pod is where you can follow the show. We will occasionally ask for questions there, make jokes, memes, observations, football stuff. It's all there, so be sure to follow the show. And Tex, we got a question in from at Whiskey Shisky, who has sent in a few questions over the past few weeks. Who out of Clay, Cobb, and Bulaga will be on the team next year? I think that's a great question.
Yeah, that is a great question. So both Matthews and Cobb have contracts that are up after this year.
Yep.
Bulaga has 1 year left on his deal. If I remember correctly, he's got about an $8.5 million cap hit. But if the Packers were to cut him at the end of this season, they'd only have about $1.6 million dead on next year's cap, and so they'd save something close to $6.5-7 million. If you're asking me now, I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's Randall Cobb. I could see them bringing him back at a little bit of a reduced rate. I don't think he's necessarily an $11 million a year player, but aside from the drop issues he had on Sunday, he's still shown this season that he's still a very productive player. And kind of with the emergence of Geronimo Allison and the development of some of the rookies, hopefully developing into playmakers on the outside, I think you still want that shifty guy in the middle of the field who can get open. And I think that's what Cobb is.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. Bulaga, the oft injured Bulaga, by the way, on today's injury report with a back injury, which I believe he went out of the game against Washington with. It'll be interesting to see what they do with him. So PJ on Twitter, as we move along, asks why is Goody not grabbing Eric Reed? Well, I'll stop you right there. He's got a secondary question. we know why, and that is because there is either an explicit blackballing of Eric Reed, or there is an implicit blackballing of Eric Reed and Colin Kaepernick. That is the answer why. But his follow-up question is, with Perry in the concussion protocol, Nick Perry, that is, wouldn't Jayrone Elliott make sense? Where is Jayrone Elliott? He is a free agent.
Yes, he is. And I don't know the answer to that question. There's a couple of free agent outside linebacker types that that I think could help this team. We can, you know, we don't need to go down the Kyler Fackrell road again. And I thought it was interesting that McCarthy said that he thought that the team could be okay with a three-man rotation for a game or two at outside linebacker if Perry can't play this week. I don't know that I'm comfortable with that personally, but yeah, that's a, especially with the issue with the Wilkerson injury as well, that takes away another front seven player. Yeah. So, you know, Elliott's a, you know, one of those players, one who just actually signed today with the New England Patriots, John Simon,
yep,
was a guy who I thought could be a, you know, maybe a candidate to help out this pass rush. The issue with Simon, I think, is he's got a neck injury that he suffered a little while back, and we know how conservative the Packers tend to be with neck issues.
Yeah.
So maybe that might have affected that a little bit. We don't know if the Packers actually had even had him in the building at all, but he ended up signing with the Patriots today, so that's out. But no, I think that it would be probably a good move to add a pass rusher at this point. But you know, if it were another time, I would say, yeah, they'll just promote Kendall Donerson off the practice squad and see what he can give you. But you know, with what we just saw from Breland today and yesterday, you know, you got to imagine that Gutekunst is at least making some phone calls outside the organization, right?
Definitely. Unlike Ted Thompson, the phone is plugged in during the season. I'm being tough on old Teddy. I like Ted. Moving along, at Luke Gardner on Twitter asks, will Goot make any trades before the trade deadline?
Man, that's a tough one, and it's so tough to tell just because right now, you know, we're still only 3 weeks in, and we don't really know who's really good, who's really bad in terms of, you know, how teams stack up in this league yet. So with the deadline being a little bit later, teams have a little more time to assess that. And I think that has lent itself to more trades in the last couple of years. I'll say this, I won't be shocked if he does. I'm not ready to go out on a limb and say that something happens, but especially if injuries continue to hit, I would definitely expect, once again, Gutekunst to be answering the phone, like you said, you know, throughout the next several weeks.
And wrapping up our listener mailbag session, friend of show Matub writes in, by the way, host of one of the installments of Pack a Day podcast, be sure to check that out. It is good stuff. He asks, what scotch do you think Aaron Rodgers drinks after a loss and which one after a win? Tex, I know that you are a scotch fan. One thing I love about the Acme Packing Company sort of private back end backroom chat that we have going on is everyone giving each other recommendations for liquors to try, which we may need here as the season goes on. But we'll start with a loss. After a tough Packers loss, Aaron Rodgers goes for what scotch?
I'm gonna go with probably a Laphroaig, because let's face it, if you're angry at yourself or just angry at life after something unfortunate happens, you're going to want something that reminds you of just how dark in the depths and down in the dirt you are. And so that peatiness of the Laphroaig, any of those Isla whiskeys, but Laphroaig especially, that's where I would probably go.
Excellent. What about a win?
So for me, I'm going to channel what I would do, and I'm going to guess that Aaron does the same. I'm going to go with something Highland, something from like the Glenlivet family. Tomatin is a distillery that I really enjoy. It's not particularly widely known, but it's one of my favorites. And you can find something probably finished in sherry casks. Add a nice little bit of a spicy bite to the end. Nice and light, but still, you know, full bodied. And like I said, that little bite at the end, I think that that's the nice thing to kind of come home, relax after a hard day's work, a successful day's work, you know, sit, enjoy for a few minutes. That's where I'm going.
Spoken like a true connoisseur, man. You should blog about this stuff. But you talk about a spicy bite. I'm not a scotch guy, but I love bourbon, and Buffalo Trace is my go-to, yep, for that spicy bite. It's a little sweet and a little spicy.
Yeah, that's definitely one of my favorites. Eagle Rare is another one in that same kind of vein that I would go for, I believe, on the bourbon.
Right?
Yes. Yeah. Yep. I believe so. Yeah. So can't go wrong.
Well, we are boring a certain percentage of our listeners at this point. So let us look ahead to Bills Bills, Packers. My goodness, the Bills. Are they good? Are they terrible? They blew out the Minnesota Vikings. Who knew that was going to happen? You know, there is something to be said for sleeping on teams, and I think that that does happen in the NFL, and we've seen a lot of stories about that this week for this reason. So what do you think about this game coming up here?
Well, the area that I'm most worried about is the Bills pass rush against the banged up Packers offensive line. I think this is one of those games where Rodgers and McCarthy need to rework and focus on getting the ball out of Rodgers' hands quickly, because if he holds the ball too long, this pass rush is going to eat him alive. And certainly you don't want to see Aaron Rodgers take hits when he's healthy, and that just compounds when he's got an injured knee. So if he's able to get the ball out quickly, I think the secondary for Buffalo can be exploited a little bit. Tre'Davious White is very good. Micah Hyde is still very good, but there's some holes there. So I like the Packers this week. I think they're going to come out motivated. Certainly after the issues that they had in Washington, I think the offense is going to look hopefully a little bit crisper. And you know, I'm crossing my fingers on the defense that maybe with a Josh Jones back, maybe with Oren Burks getting a little bit more playing time. I think those two guys will be kind of important against LeSean McCoy for Buffalo.
Yeah, definitely.
Kind of keeping him contained in the backfield a little bit in the passing game.
Yeah, we didn't really touch on Oren Burks here today, but him coming back into the lineup, I think over the next few weeks is going to become a bigger and bigger deal. You know, McCarthy in his press conference today did talk about sort of the uncommon opponent. I'm not Alex Pataka, so I can't do a great Mike McCarthy impression. I will leave that to him. But he talked about uncommon opponents, and he talked about not sleeping on opponents. Honestly, his record against, I think against the AFC, he is, I want to say 24-19. I looked that up earlier. I'm not sure of the accuracy there, but just above 500, so not a losing record, but not knocking my socks off, and certainly not as good as his other records there. What do you make of that?
I don't know. I honestly don't know if there's a trend there. I don't know if it's just the fact that it's a little bit smaller sample size than the rest of his track record. It's strange because we've seen him come out and outcoach great teams like the Patriots in 2014.
Yep.
You know, that still is like my high watermark as far as McCarthy's performance as a head coach and a play caller. And then, you know, there've been some other real duds. The last time the Packers played Buffalo, in Buffalo 4 years ago, that was a pretty crappy game, and they ended up losing in an upset. So I don't know. I don't have an answer for you.
Help me, Tex. Help me understand.
I know.
Well, what do you think about, let's get a prediction here. So Vegas, and first of all, I have to clear the air. I'm not actually wearing a dunce cap, but I guess figuratively I am, because I got owned in the comment section last week on the episode. I misread the line and said that Washington was favored. They were not favored. I am not a gambler. I was filling in for Alex as the host, who occasionally will dabble and at least speaks that language. But I made extra sure to check this time, and I know that the Packers are heavy, heavy favorites. What do you think is the outcome of this game?
Yeah, ultimately, I think the Packers are able to move the ball well. I think you're going to see a lot of work with the running game, like I was saying earlier, with Aaron Jones, hopefully. I like the Packers winning this game. And I think we had talked before you told me what the spread was. I was thinking Packers 10, 11 or so. And I guess that's right about where Vegas had them, right?
10.5 as of earlier this afternoon on a Wednesday. So,
well, the Packers haven't covered the spread yet this year. So let's say they win by 11. Let's go 31-20 Packers.
Excellent. And, I as well, I'm going to take the Packers. I really think that the Vikings played down to them. And you can't do that in the NFL. I think that the Bills will come back to reality, and I think that the Packers will look to bounce back. And speaking for Alex Patakis and Ben Foley, who are not here, who have not given me picks, I'm going to take the Packers on their behalf as well, because screw them, they're not here.
I like it. Yeah, the one other thing I'll say is if Mike Pettine can confuse Josh Allen, the rookie quarterback, with some interesting blitzes, I think that's something that certainly would favor the Packers. I look forward to seeing that.
Definitely. And before we go, let's get an update in the APC Podcast Listener Pick'em League. It has been three topsy-turvy weeks here in the NFL, and while it's still a little murky, one thing is crystal clear. I am a moron. I rank 26th. Ben Foley has rocketed up to 16th, while Alex is humming along at 33rd, bringing up the rear. So maybe I'm not as big of a moron as I think. But here are your top five. It's a crowded field with Matthew Cook. Listener Matthew Cook now leading the way, followed very closely by Nicholas Price, Nick Varley, Lauren Summer, and Glenn Hintz. So nice work to you guys. And also a shout out to APC contributor Mike Veith, who is doing the blog proud by coming in at sixth overall right now. Tex, where are you in the standings?
I don't know. It's been a rough week. I got to see where my picks came.
I'll cut you some slack. You were on vacation. I'll cut you some slack.
Yeah.
All right,
I'm prepared today.
So as the polka kicks in here, you know what the music means. Tex, do you have any closing thoughts here for the listeners as we head out and into this game against Buffalo?
Yeah, I think don't drop the ball, and we'll be in a much better position offensively. And like I said, watch for the Bills pass rush against the Packers offensive line and the Packers pass rush against Josh Allen. I think those are going to be the big areas I'm going to be watching for.
Don't drop the ball. Make the call. Eisenberg, Weigel, and Carlson. did you live in the Wisconsin market when Gilbert Brown did those law firm commercials?
Oh, yeah. Yep. Oh, classic.
They're like burned in my memory. David Gruber, too. He's just stuck in there in a recess of my mind that I can't get out. Great. So, Tex, thank you for dialing in here on short notice. It's a crazy week. Alex Batakis is in Peru. Ben Foldy is a student of life, and his schedule is just crazy. He's in grad school. I'm a copywriter, so my schedule is flexible. I'm ready to podcast whenever. So, Tex, thank you for stopping by at Tex Western on Twitter, at Zach Rapport, at Alex Batakis, at Ben Foldy, at the APC Podcast. Please give us a rating on iTunes if you've not done so already. It really does help sort of boost the profile of the show and get it in front of more people to check it out and broaden the listener base, broaden the APC Podcast community. So for Tex Western, Alex Batakis, Ben Foldy, I am Zach Rapport. From Queens, New York, let's go Pack Go. Let's get a win.